Welcome to Mulling It Over with Brandon Mole.
Hi, I'm Brandon Mole. I'm a number one New York Times bestselling author of a bunch of fantasy series like the Fablehaven series and many more.
And I'm Jason Conforto. I'm a filmmaker, a podcaster, and game designer. In this podcast, we're excited to share our love for story and our passion to create.
We hope to share a bunch of experiences and lessons learned over a lifetime in creative fields.
All right, so today we are back with Shelley and Chad and Brandon talking about heart and writing with heart today. So, Shelley, tell me, when we were talking about ideas for shows, this was like your passion. This is what you wanted to do. You're directing this episode. So tell me a little bit about.
Oh, great one. Tell us what we'll talk about.
When you talk about writing with heart, what does that mean to you?
I think every genre of book, and there might be some exceptions to this, and I believe that that's possible, but almost every genre of book or storytelling in general, whether, you know, like you're talking about film or television or any sort of storytelling medium, it's going to have something that you connect to with your heart. You know, when we're talking about family or friendships or suffering and struggle or loneliness, just those things that are universal to the human experience. And so that's where I think that like heart pull is. And I mm-hmm. think that it's super important no matter what kind of story that you're writing.
Do you find that or have you ever had a book where you started writing it and you didn't have that connection and you had to find that heart connection before the book actually took off? Or are you just, cause I know you guys partner, right?
Right.
And so like, is this, have you ever had something where Chad's like, hey, we're doing this. And you're like, I'm not connecting yet.
My heart is not in this.
Yeah.
No, honestly, I think both Chad and I both have a desire to be very vulnerable in our writing. And so most of our stories come with a lot of heart, but I have done a lot of like editing and beta reading for other people that sometimes I'm like, that was like a very good adventure story, but I didn't really care.
Right.
And I had to ask myself, like, what small, it really can be very small tweaks can we do to make this a story that's just more robust and more fulfilling for the reader?
Gotcha.
Well, I'll give you an example that I thought of. So Shelley and I wrote this book together. It's called Virtually Me. It's about kids that go to a virtual school, right? And
like virtual reality.
Virtual reality school. And it would be a certain kind of kid that decides to go to virtual school, right? And so there's three main characters, and one is named Bradley, and I think he naturally has a lot of heart. He chooses virtual school because he has like no friends. He's mm-hmm. been super embarrassed in school. If he can, you know, take school in his home, in his sweatpants, that's like love. You know, he just is so excited to do that. And I think kids can relate to that, right? Some are like, I don't have any friends. I don't want to do that. He figures out you can change your avatar when you go to school, and he wants to totally kind of redefine himself and maybe finally make friends. Again, I think that's relatable. The second character is a girl. Her name's Adele, and she's super pretty. And her mom thinks she's kind of let that go too far. Mm-hmm. And her mom's like, I want you to go to virtual school, and I want you to not have your avatar be pretty. And I want you to see, you know, how that
what
goes.
Like. Yeah,
and
yeah.
She's like, I've got this. Another proof. I think those, again, I think some people might relate to that a little bit. But we had a third character that was the harder one. And his name's Hunter. And he's like super confident. He's an athlete. He's great at lacrosse, right? He loves the clutch kind of thing. And he's going to virtual school for a secret reason, right? But that one we talked a lot about.
Like, where's the heart?
Where's the heart in this?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
How are kids going to relate to this character?
Because he is super confident, right? And our initial drafts, people were like, we don't like Hunter as much, right?
And I was like, I don't like Hunter either.
Right, and you had to really think about
which,
it.
Which is a bad thing when the author... doesn't like the character. When the feedback is like, we don't like him, he's like, I don't like him either.
Well, and that's the thing, though. When you're telling a story, it doesn't matter if it is some super confident athlete or if you're writing an anti-hero. There's always something about every character and, frankly, every person in the world that you can relate to somehow, right? Something that makes them that you're interested in them, that you want something good to happen in their life, right? And finding that little angle sometimes can be tricky, both in writing and sometimes in real life, right? Like, what about them helps me like them and cheer for them? And it's an interesting struggle to kind of think
You brought up that character, it reminded me of a character in one of Brandon's books who is cocky and overconfident and happens to be Kendra and Seth's cousin
Knox.
Yeah. Did you have a hard time with Knox and trying to find the heart with Knox? Can you relate to that type of experience that they had with this character?
Yeah. I mean, a lot of the humanness in a character comes as you find their weaknesses and vulnerabilities and fears and things like that. Right. And Knox, see, here's the thing. When I wrote Dragon Watch, one of the things that my agent wanted to see, he's like, I want to see some younger characters come into this story. So we have the fun of some characters discovering Fablehaven for the first time in this sequel series, instead of only characters that are familiar with this place. Cause the wonder of the discovery is so much fun.
Right.
And so it became, okay, so I want two new characters that aren't going to feel like replicants of Kendra and Seth in Fablehaven. And so I was like, okay, the boy, I was like, he's got to be a foil to Seth, you know? Cause like, I mean, even the cousins I love a lot, like my cousin Mike, you also are like, there's some one-upmanship there and there's some foiling each other and teasing each other. And so I decided that I needed a character that was from Texas.
Yeah. Is that the opposite of California?
No, we do have, be careful because we do have some listeners from Texas. So
no. Like I think the listeners from Texas.
It sounds like you're about to mess with Texas, is all I'm saying.
I think the listeners from Texas will just nod along with everything that I'm saying because Knox just loves Texas. And when I go to Texas on book tour, people in Texas love Texas a lot. Like the example would be, if I go to get waffles at a motel anywhere in the country,
they're Texas shaped.
No, in the country they tend to be round.
Oh yeah.
But in Texas, they are shaped like Texas.
It's true. As somebody who's also booked toward Texas. Yeah.
Almost every time.
You will eat in the shape of our state. We love it that much.
And how else would it fit on a Texas shaped plate if the waffle wasn't shaped?
That's exactly it. Well, here's the thing. Like I just found that Texas has good self-esteem. It's like, and they explained to me that like we're the one state where we fly our state flag the same height as the national flag.
Yeah.
This is worked out like with the government. Right. And so I was like, I want a cocky kid. And if I've got a cocky kid, Texas seemed like my place. Right. And so that's part of his character. And he's kind of obnoxious. I literally named him Knox partly because you can expand that out to obnoxious, which Seth does from time to time. And so you've got that kind of character. And the question becomes, where's the heart?
Right.
Right. And
because it doesn't work if everybody just hates him.
Yeah. It totally wouldn't work. So part of the question becomes, in what ways is this guy earnest? In what ways do we see his bluster, but then when he gets in over his head, we see his vulnerability, right? Yeah. And it's finding the vulnerability underneath all the bluster that we make these discoveries. I'm going to assume that something like that was true for Hunter.
Yeah. Yeah. And you figure out, for example, you'll figure out some of that confidence is fake.
Oh, sure.
Right. And he's,
so these are like real teenagers then.
Yeah.
Right. And you just deal with it different ways and he's got things he's worried about too. Right. And that's a real thing that we can relate to. And you're like, wait, maybe some other people are just pretending a little bit too sometimes. Right.
Well, maybe.
Yeah. Maybe.
If you go to,
maybe right now,
if you find a really special junior high, you might find some false confidence here and there
every now and then.
Some people that might be kind of faking it a little.
Yeah. So part of why I write with heart for the middle grade audience is purely what we're talking about right now. And that is because middle grade is in junior high school. Those are just some of the hardest times. And I think we need a couple things.
And if they're not, congratulations.
I know. That's weird, but we'll keep going. Honestly, and they're just I don't know, that obnoxious word is coming back, but like they're just so such a struggle, and I think that kids need to know that you're not alone. A lot of people are struggling, and I think that that comes through in our stories, as well as there's hope, there's things to learn, there's ways to grow. You're going to be okay. You're going to make it out. And also, here's an escape. Why don't you just jump into this person's life for a little bit? And why don't you not worry about your own? Like, I think that books are great for that reason. And I think offering them a little bit of heart along the way just makes it a better story. I think of the Avengers franchise. Those people, those writers, they know how to write a very action-packed, fast-paced, you know, story, and they always put in heart because right. They know it's gonna make a difference.
Yeah, it needs to matter.
Yeah.
But I think Shelley, I think you're wise to, and I'm grateful that you consider that audience so earnestly, right? Like because this generation of kids, there's a lot more anxiety, there's a lot more depression, there's a lot more suicide. There's, you know, the social media and the pressures there and all that stuff. And if you're going to be writing in the genre of contemporary for middle grade, these almost become your babies that you have to just tell me how important it is just your thoughts on your audience and just caring for them. How much is that when you're writing, how much does that come to play?
Almost always when I'm writing these characters, I'm thinking about people that I know in these age ranges that are living with struggles, and have some things in their own lives that I wish I could just open their eyes to. I wish I could just let them know, hey, you're good just the way you are, or maybe you should pay more attention to the people around you and less inside your own head, or, you know, just these very basic, very simple messages that we all fall victim to. But just that reminder. And so I keep these kids in my heart and in my head as I'm writing. Sometimes their voice shows up there too, but in hopes that they feel heard and they feel seen.
And as an author, that's like one of your favorite things is when a reader sends you an email or pulls you aside after some signing or something and just tells you how they resonated with a book, right? Even if it is just, hey, this got me through a really tough time, or really resonated with this character. And I've read this thing several times, right? And sometimes I need it and I go back to this book, and it's just great to have hopefully something out there that helps.
Yeah. Right? So let's talk for a second about resonance, right? So like if you take a tuning fork and you strike it and you have a tuning fork that is of the same frequency, if you should strike it, you strike the one tuning fork and you bring the other in proximity and it will start to vibrate. Mm-hmm. And this is called resonance. And resonance happens when there are two like materials, and there won't be resonance in your book unless there's something like what's on the inside of real people happening in your book.
Yeah.
Because without something like that in there, there's nothing to resonate with. Right.
Yeah.
And so deeply, one of the challenges is how do I get, I'm making these people out of words, but how do I get some real humanity and some real truth into these people that I'm making out of words, right? So that right. Someone can read it and go, yeah, I know that feeling. And to me, it's hard to do that with just words, right? If I approached it through words, I'm not sure how well I would get there. Maybe some people could. But for me, it's like you have to lead with your heart on that stuff, right? Like you have to write from your guts and your heart.
And vulnerability.
And first you go, oh yeah, this feeling. I know this feeling. I remember this feeling. Oh, can I get that in there? You know, how do I speak this into the story? And that is such a fun challenge, right? To bring some actual pain, fear, insecurity, humanity, but where you can create a situation that draws that out of a character, that's where real magic happens in a story, I think. You
know? It's like poetry, but like in prose, in very simple prose too. If the simpler and the easier to connect to, the better. But it is the fun of the poetry where you're like, I'm going to put my heart out. Does your heart feel like mine?
And what I hear when you say poetry is, to me, poetry is where we try to make words say more than they can typically say.
Yeah.
Right. And so when we get poetry into our novels and our little middle grade fantasies or whatever it is that we're writing, it's where something comes to life inside of those words, right? Where the words are doing more than they can normally do. And I don't think that happens very much unless you can kind of lead with your spirit or your heart in some way. Right?
I think most of your book isn't going to be poetry, right? Yeah. Right. It's moments. It's where you can put it down and then you have to test it out. Cause maybe your poetry just isn't getting received well.
Well, and then
you can change it.
I want to put a magnifying glass on the genius of what you just said. Because this only happens in moments. It doesn't happen in summary, right? If you summarize something, there's not much to resonate with there. But life happens in moments. And when in a book you create a moment with resonance, in that moment you can capture something that resonates that almost will never be captured if you summarize events.
Yeah. That's beautiful. I love that. You know, Shelley, you mentioned being vulnerable. What does that look like for you when you're writing? That word vulnerable, how does that come out, especially if you're making up characters and making up stories? How is it showing a side of you that would be more comfortable hidden, and yet you know to make this character work you've got to reveal something about yourself?
I think Brandon said it pretty well in just that you say, I know what it feels like to be lonely. And now I'm going to tell you what it feels like for me to be lonely. Or, you know, I know what it feels like to feel like your family is broken. Or I know what it feels like to feel like your friends are betraying you. Like, I know what those feelings feel like. And I'm willing to put them on paper in a situation that's not exactly like my own, you know, but like I'm willing to put them on paper and to have somebody turn around and say, this book sucks, you know, like, so it's always vulnerable. You're always putting yourself out there whenever you're writing, but, especially like I did the audiobook for Mustaches for Maddie. And I thought, why am I putting my voice on this? So people can be like, I hate your writing. I hate your voice. I hate everything about you.
And I hate your child.
And I hate your child. Exactly. Yeah. I hate your family. I hate your voice.
It's based on a true story, just in case readers didn't know that.
Yeah.
Listeners.
I realize.
Which, by the way, I should say, Shelley did an amazing job. She got a starred review for her reading of Mustache for Maddie. So
one star.
That's awesome.
Thank you, Cricket.
You can only get one star.
You can only get one star.
The star is like special. Special, awesome.
Yeah. Awesome. So Chad, you're one of the funniest guys I know. I know you're kind of one of those humor first guys, right? And often when I think a lot of times people use humor as a shield to protect you from showing kind of your real side, right?
Right.
And I also know there's a sensitive side to you and a serious side. But tell me how you let that side of you out when you write.
That's a great question. And you know what? I think, and we'll talk about this, I think, in a different episode, but there is something to humor, which is awesome. And in a lot of places, humor means hope. Right? Like you don't usually joke around unless you think there's a chance that good things could be coming.
Right.
So it actually can be a very vulnerable thing in certain places to use humor and not use it, right? When you have a character who is very funny and really jokes around, and then you get to a place where they're not joking around anymore. Right. That can be, like in our, we have a book coming up, The Playmakers, and, two kids that don't make the basketball team, they're best friends for forever. And they're joking around through the whole book. Right. But then at the very end, there's a moment where one of them actually gets serious and it just stands out as different because they don't do that. Right. Cause like, that's me growing up, you know, I just joke around with my friends. You don't like, hey man, let's have a heart to heart. We just
need a hug.
Don't.
And by the way, pass the ball.
For whatever reason, right? That's just not what we do. But there are ways.
And it's creepy if like you're setting up a tent. That's me using humor to hide my vulnerabilities.
Hide the soft side.
Brandon's very uncomfortable right now.
Yeah, but there's the heart is in everybody, right? And even the people that joke around a lot, there's little times where you see them, I don't know, just do something for a reason where there's something deeper behind it, because they're really worried about something, or because they really want to do something nice or cool. And it is, I mean, we literally have a couple scenes like based on my life, you know, where you're like, oh, this happened to me. Yeah, right. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And this like killed me when this happened, or a version of it. Right. You always fictionalize it. And this is how I wish I would have reacted, or this is exactly how it felt to me. And I'm hoping someone else, right, has if they've had that similar experience, they can hopefully go on a journey where it ends up okay in the end. Right.
And then there's that really weird challenge of having something that really happened to you and trying to find what are the details that will get this across.
Yeah.
Because like often if I summarize what happened to me,
you don't feel it.
It doesn't have any of the same impact.
Right.
And so it's almost like a method actor who has to go to this place where you find what were those emotions and what really triggered it? And like, what are the details that hit me then and would help these words transcend the experience, or transmit the experience to the reader, you know? And it could be so hard because in my mind, sometimes hardest when they're very personal,
mm-hmm.
because they already resonate for you, like the memory yeah, of right, it. Right. And it's like, but how do I make this resonate for someone with no attachment to mm-hmm. it? Right. And it's a fun challenge. And it sometimes is, a painful challenge, but it's a really interesting challenge to try to find what are the concrete details that evoke this emotion, sometimes even without naming the emotion.
Yeah.
But just trying to evoke it without naming it, right? Yeah. Like so that the reader just feels what you felt without you even trying to say what that was, you know? And that's
right.
Done best, that's kind of what it looks like, but it's so hard to do sometimes.
Yeah, a character's talking a little louder than normal, right? And you're like, wait, are they super uncomfortable?
Yeah, something going
right?
on.
Right? There's something where you're trying to help the reader know there's something behind this right now without saying what it is.
In Squint, we have a character. The whole book starts with some popular kids going up to Flint, and Flint just really has isolated himself from most other kids in general. So he's sitting by himself, drawing, and these kids come up to him, these popular kids, and this girl's like, has anyone ever told you that you were cute before? And he's like, no. And she's like, I didn't think so. And it almost hits all by itself. Like yeah, yeah. There, you don't need a lot of language in there because nobody wants that to happen to them, you know? And so that was one of those moments, you know, in writing where you're just like, oh, I think on this one, you can pull back enough that we all know what that would feel like yeah. if somebody said that to me.
You don't need to over-explain that one.
And then sometimes you
don't need a sentence saying, and that hurt his feelings. And he was sad.
Guess how he felt, dear reader.
And then sometimes you write and you write that bare bones and then you hand it to somebody and they're like, so? Yeah.
And?
What am I supposed to feel?
Well, this one's interesting. So this one is, I actually had a girl say that to me. Right. This one's based on me as like a junior high kid. And the funny part is when I was putting it into a book, it almost feels too mean to be real.
Right. Right. That this could never happen.
Yeah. And so we actually pull back on it, you know, like, oh, they just dared me to say that, you know, whatever. It still hurt. But that's an interesting thing, too. Sometimes you're like, actually, this is real, but it's not coming across as powerful. Mm-hmm. Right. And you have to sometimes think, why not? Even though that was the real thing that happened, how can I get this across in a way that feels genuine and realistic? I don't know.
I've got one like that where believe it or not, this is hard to believe, but I wasn't
I haven't always been attractive.
I wasn't. Yeah,
you can't see me, but I'm a very attractive man. I don't know what those girls were thinking.
Yeah. It's strange credulity, but I wasn't very cool in middle school.
You,
I was at certain times in middle school, pretty close to the bottom of the barrel. I think if you voted in the class, like, who should we get rid of? They'd be like, yeah, we could get rid of him. He just, all he does is stare at
to be ugly.
Yeah. But like, like an example of that was I was so scatterbrained that I was always the last out of my class. And so I drove home with my mom. My mom would pick me up. And so my little sister Summer would come to my classroom to like fetch me kind of, cause like she was always ready to go ahead of me. And I'm still like fumbling through papers and taking forever and just so disorganized.
And she's zipping up your backpack, your yeah. older brother.
And my sister Summer looked mainstream. She was pretty well adjusted. And I remember one day she came to the classroom and, this girl was like, oh yeah, what are you looking for? And she's like, oh, I'm just waiting for your brother. Oh, who's your brother? And she points and she's like, that's your brother. Do you like him? And that's a rough one, you know what I mean? But it's that kind of thing where
you like.
Yeah, it's awesomely that vulnerable thing, right? But like, that's one too, where it's like, that's so harsh that it works really well for really happening.
Right.
But probably might not even work in fiction. I like certain things are too weird to be true, you know? And so sometimes in fiction, you have to find what's a slant that does that same thing, but isn't quite so on the nose.
Right.
Just you know, gutting you.
Those junior high years are so difficult and so painful. And I think about the things that I don't like about myself, right? The things when I look in the mirror and I'm a full grown man, I'm bald, and that doesn't bother me because I didn't get made fun of in junior high for being bald, right? I got made fun of in junior high for being overweight. And so now, like today, I still carry that self-image of that. And it's a constant fight and battle. My story like that was I had a crush on a girl and so I'm talking to a friend and he's going to talk to her and he's going to report back to me. And what I got back was she said that you were too fat to date, you know, and it's one of those, and you can't undo that. Right. Like those things. And so,
and there's like a little evil spirit inside of you that's saying like, you knew this was true.
Yeah.
Now it's fact.
Yeah. But you guys are writing to that age, right? Okay. You're writing to those kids that are dealing with this stuff all the time. Right. And trying to get the message across. What just not with writing, but just what message do you want these kids to know when they read your books, or if you could just talk to them, what is this thing that you're trying to tell these kiddos?
I only laugh because it's not one message. Those voices in our heads through middle school, they're so loud and they have so many things to say to us.
They are legion.
Yeah. For reals though, right? Like they just don't stop. And so like there's like countless messages throughout the whole every story. Now, with that being said, if somebody told me that they were going to hand me a book with countless messages of positivity throughout them, I would not read that book.
Right.
I would leave that book. So it's also very well put together stories that are for fun and there's a lot of humor and
tasty broth for the junior high school story.
Exactly.
That sounds so good.
That's the danger of it all. Right. But I genuinely like, there's so many things that I would love to just take their little faces in my hands with both hands on both sides of their cheeks and just stare them in the eye and say, you are great the way you are. Just the way you are. And you don't have to listen to the other people. They have their own struggles.
All I can see now is Billy Madison.
And the little cheeks
he grabs that little kid and he's like, never grow up. Don't go out in the world.
Well,
you're too precious.
Here's an answer too. One of the great things about writing stories is you can bring up problems, right? Really interesting trouble. And you have these characters dealing with it. And because it's one step removed, your reader gets to kind of like imagine, right? Think, well, what would I do in that crazy trouble, right? How would I react? And that gives some space that helps you kind of process some stuff, right? Like we have this book, The Wild Journey of Juniper Berry, right? The girl grows up off the grid. Her brother gets sick and they come into town for the very first time, right? And she is super confident. I mean, because she can build rafts and avoid bears.
And she avoided all of the bullying through elementary school in the beginning.
Yeah, she doesn't know she's awkward and weird.
She has
nobody's
zero idea.
Told her that, yeah.
And she's never seen anyone her own age, right? And when she gets into middle school, everybody seems to care what everybody else thinks. And she's never cared, right? That's very interesting trouble.
Right.
I think, right? To think about what would that be like? What if I'd never cared about what anybody else thought of
me? Which is also problematic.
Sure.
Yeah. Well, there's two edges to that.
Yeah.
Right? And that's all part of the interesting trouble, right? There probably should be part of me that cares a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
What
so
other people
take a
think.
Shower.
Right. Exactly. But yet there's also part of me that maybe shouldn't. So that's one of the great things about writing these stories is you don't even have to come across with a direct message. It's like, this is really interesting trouble. And then this is one way somebody that really tries hard gets through it.
Yeah.
Right. And there's that G.K. Chesterton quote. I tried to look it up. I'm not getting Wi-Fi in here. You guys have this.
I've got it.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay. No. Oh, there. Just reloaded.
This is good radio. I love it.
Yeah. Drum roll, please. Anticipation.
Here we go. G.K. Chesterton. Fairy tales do not tell children dragons exist. Children already know that dragons exist. Fairy tales tell children that dragons can be killed.
Yeah. So the cool part about story is you're seeing one way where somebody faces a dragon and wins.
Yeah.
Right. And so you could, a kid can walk out and say, well, my dragon's not exactly the same, but I've faced one and I know some of the things that might help.
Yeah. Do you want to hear about
fighting.
An identical dragon?
Sure.
Shannon Hill already dropped that quote on our podcast.
Oh, no.
No, she probably dropped it without looking it up.
She did.
She probably memorized it coming in.
Oh, making us look bad.
I think she read it off her tattoo.
Yeah. Oh.
Actually, we recorded this before Shannon. She's copying us.
So, Brandon, I have a question for you because when you write, you write mainly in series, right?
Yeah.
And there's something that happens to you in a 5-book series in book 5, right? Like you turn into something different where it's like you can feel this like pent up energy that has been going all the way to book 5 when the series climaxes and you've had all this build up to this moment. And I can see your excitement when you're writing those books, the finales. Tell me about bringing in heart to a climax, right? Tell me about when adventure peaks. It has to be more than just a cool sword fight, right? Tell me about the heart that you bring into those moments and what that does for you.
Yeah, I mean, so part of it is just being nerdy in general. Part of it is writing about stuff that I just love.
Right.
And where I'm so excited to see the climax, right? Because if my little nerd fibers are quivering with an enormous thrill.
He's shaking right now. Yeah, you can't see that on the podcast.
But. Hopefully that will come across in the prose. Again, like trusting that if I have to find my way almost with the feeling first, right? And find my way to the words through the feeling a little bit, right? Some of that book 5 stuff is that we've been setting up, building. And if I've been building something that I'm excited to share, then I am, as a writer, I am so excited as I'm creating that payoff that's going to come across. And you, Jason, quoted, like, I think it was Beyonders. We were like, did you like Beyonders? And you're like, excuse me, did you like Beyonders book 3? I asked. And you're like, yeah, if you like 500 pages of climax. And anyway,
yes, that was me.
And it was generally meant as a compliment a big explosive, you know, finale. And to me, that's what I'm aiming for. I when we've gotten to book 5, hopefully what we've earned is a massive finale at the end of the fireworks show, you know, where all sorts of stuff is going off, stuff you were waiting for and stuff that surprises you. And if I can make that happen, then I feel like, and if those moments feel honest and earned, mm-hmm. that brings the heart with it.
And know? Honestly, like, yeah, no, the end of Brandon's series always do have heart because you've already built up all these characters and we need to see where this is going. So you're really good at still making sure there's fireworks and you're going to also be like super invested in their success and in their joy and in their, you know, making things happen.
I have a thought to add to kind of what books do. And this isn't my own original thought. This is something that I've...
E.K. Chesterton?
Almost.
Quote it. Are you going to quote Shannon Hale?
Shannon's tattoos?
I don't even know where this thought originated. So someone will have to do that research for me. But I've heard this spoken when I was out listening to conferences and listening to writers. And I love that I heard spoken that sometimes a book can be like a mirror. And sometimes a book can be like a window, right?
Yeah, that was Chad who said that.
It might have been, yeah. And
definitely.
And but that thought can be is when we're talking about how does a book connect to a middle school kid, when there is stuff in the book that they have experienced, whether it's emotions or whether they read something and go, oh, they just put into words something I felt, but I haven't named to myself yet, but they just named it in a way that helps me understand it better. And that way a book is acting like a mirror, mm-hmm. and it's showing them a little bit of themselves as they go through an experience with a character. And in other times, a character might think or feel or experience something profound that does not resonate with them directly. They're like, I don't have that experience in me, but it's interesting to see how someone else feels. And in that time, it's like a window. It's showing you how someone else might feel in a certain situation. And both things foster understanding mm-hmm. and build empathy. And like by vicariously experiencing something, you get a taste of the real thing. And anytime that happens, a reader will come away wiser.
Yeah. No, I love that.
That's fantastic. A book called Willa and the Whale. And Willa has lost her mother. And I can't tell you how many times I get kids come to me who have lost very important people in their life. And these kids are the mirrors. But most children, fortunately, won't lose a parent, right? Thank goodness that that's not going to be your average child's experience. But when I talk to kids, I talk about how understanding a book like that helps them be a better friend to somebody who is experiencing loss, you know, like helps them understand people who are struggling like that. And maybe sometimes in our struggles, we don't make our very best choices and stuff like that, and be patient with each other as we try to fumble through life.
Plus, I think there's this thing, like if I had to try to define it, it'd be like vicarious empathy. I don't know how to say it. You can learn, like, empathy is a skill in some ways. So sometimes it comes naturally and sometimes we have to work on it, right? And people who are naturally like us, we naturally have an empathy for. But there are people that are not naturally like us, and in a book could be a place where you learn to appreciate them, right, a little more. I had an experience once in junior high where I sat right behind like this gorgeous girl that everybody talked about all the time. Right. And I was super nervous and never talked to her, but gradually over
until
the semester,
she became your wife one day.
Yeah, no, yes. It wasn't. No. But anyway,
he's talking about some other gorgeous girl. I'm interested. Keep going.
Yeah, no. But anyway, over a couple of little experiences, I figured out like she has lonely times too. Mm-hmm. Right. And that like blew my mind. I was like,
you're too pretty to be lonely.
Exactly. No, but seriously, I think that's what I thought.
Lonely.
Which is like your lacrosse player.
Exactly. Right? Yeah. It's like you're too popular. You're too pretty to be lonely, to worry about what other people think. Right. And there are these situations in books where you can figure out, hey, this person's not like me, mm-hmm. but that is really interesting that they might think that way or feel that way. Right. No matter what anybody does in life, they always have a reason behind what they do. Right. And as an author, you get to kind of explore that, even if they're a villain.
Yeah.
Right. They're not trying to be a villain usually. Right. Or if they are, they've got motivation behind that. Right. And it's interesting to try to explore why do we do what we do, and how could we even understand different kinds of people a little bit better?
Yeah, that's awesome. Now, you know, when it comes to writing heart, I don't think it's probably a more personal book that you guys have written than Mustaches for Maddie. And tell me what that's like as a mother and a father to write about probably the hardest thing that you guys have ever gone through, and sharing that with the world, and just walk me through that experience for you guys.
You looked at me. You want me to do it? Okay. We didn't introduce that one this time, right?
No. So go ahead and introduce.
Okay. So yeah. It. So when I wrote my first book was called The Inventor's Secret, and like 3 weeks before it's coming out and my like dream is coming true, right? I'm finally getting
Nothing
published.
Nothing could go wrong in your life.
I'm going to go on my first book tour. I'm really excited. People have given some positive reviews. About 3 weeks before, we find out that my little girl has a brain tumor. Right. And so it, you know, I cancel book tour, you know, some of this stuff just doesn't matter. We go in, my daughter faces it with just this awesome hope and sense of humor. And she's got great friends and people are fantastic to rally around her. Right. And do some great stuff. Anyway, a little time passes and my publisher's like, hey, have you ever thought about telling that story? And we took some convincing, but we decided to do it. And that's part of what's hard about it. You're like laying your heart on the line mm-hmm. with this one. And we had lots of conversations with Maddie, you know, do you want us to write this book?
I wouldn't say she wanted us to write the book, but she didn't stop us from writing the book.
Well, she approved every draft.
She approved every draft.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Is this something, I mean, again, people are awesome. She loves mustaches. They all wore these mustaches for, people just rose up in great ways. We thought this story could do some good. But it is tricky to put your heart out there
and your family, because the story mm-hmm. is based on the true story of our family. And there's a lot of brothers in there and some jealousy in there and some, you know, some silly stories that are true in there that, and then you've got, there's a bully situation in there. And we were really careful that no child would recognize themselves as the bully. In
there. Yeah. We changed the circumstance. It's kind of more of a manipulative person. Mm-hmm. Right. Than the classic bully.
Tell us who the bully actually was.
Yeah. Let's give you real names. Yeah, no, we changed.
Let's drag
all
him through the mud.
Yeah. Let's get
it's
down the
years.
Real deal. But here's another element of the heart of that. So in the, through the whole story, we've all like Maddie's real story turns out great. She's now had three brain surgeries and she's doing awesome.
Yeah.
Right. But through the process, I mean, we're in hospitals. And we meet lots of families with lots of kids who are in hospitals and their stories don't always have the same great endings as ours has right so far. And that's also in the back of my mind, you know, when I'm writing this, what if, you know, our friend that was in the hospital room over picks up our story. How is this going to go over?
Or they're a brother or a sister, you know, of a child who's lost a sibling to one of them.
I remember one of the most difficult moments in my life was when Jameson was in the hospital when he was 4 years old and he was in primary children's for about 2 weeks fighting an infection and it wasn't looking good. And I remember Natalie and I walking through the corridors back behind where only parents are during surgeries and whatnot. And I still remember walking past another couple and I don't know what they had experienced, but I know they had experienced something far more traumatic than what Natalie and I were going through. And there's just real people suffering and, you know, that primary children's hospital is a sacred place for us and our family and stuff that happened there. But yeah, when you're dealing with little kids in such a, and so helpless too, like they don't know what's going on fully. They don't know the extent and there's just real pain throughout. And so just to have that sensitivity for those readers too. And that experience is it's great that you guys would consider them as well in telling that story.
Particularly the ending. Do you want to finish that?
Sure. Yeah. I was going to say, I don't want to give up spoilers, but the ending was hard to do. And we decided to, I'm really proud of it because the book's actually a lot funnier than most people think. Right. That's actually what they say. That was a lot funnier than I thought.
That's the funniest kid cancer book of the year.
Right.
But genuinely,
a category
it really
for
is.
That, right?
Yeah.
Because that was how like we dealt with
comedy.
A lot of it. Yeah, it's really, really funny.
Well, and the title calls that out with the mustaches for Maddie, right?
Right.
Yeah. But so we decided to end it in a way that leaves it kind of open-ended, right? Like you don't know
some ambiguity about
some ambiguity about the ending, and yet knowing that she's going to be able to face it, and the family's going to be able to face it, right? And it, hopefully, and we did it in a way that I think is actually really fun and really funny, and then also has this heart. And that's my favorite. If somebody's like reading and it's pleasant and they laugh and then just something hits you.
And you guys had to write yourselves too. What was that like?
We are so amazing in that book.
Best parents ever.
Parents ever.
Cancer came, but there was one man, one hero.
Well, it does make it easier. Oh, sorry, Shell. You were going to say something.
Oh, I don't even know what I was going to say.
It does make it easier in some ways because you could write in true stories.
Yeah.
Right? Like just real funny things that happened or real, like I'd have nights, you know, on the heart end. I mean, I'd had nights when I wake up and I just couldn't sleep, you know? And so I'd like wander and just be, it almost sounds creepy, just be outside a room. Right. And just praying like crazy that something good's going to happen. And you get just a little hint of that in the book is all you get. You know, for me, it was like night after night, just trying to deal with this thing, but you get a little sliver of what it might have been like, right? And you put yourself in the story, because it's not my story, it's Maddie's story.
Yeah,
but we can put little slivers of what we do. And Shell is so great with Maddie, and you'll see that in the book too. It's awesome.
Well, and that's how you do it, because you can't show the completeness of the grief. It's impressionism.
Yeah,
and so your experience with the grief gives you some notes to hit as you use impressionism to convey emotions and heart.
Right. Right.
Mm-hmm. Whereas I was super scared because I was like, are they going to hate us for not having caught this earlier? Like
as if it's your fault.
Yeah. To some degree, there's always that worry of people judging your parenting and being like, you came up short. Yeah. And it's like, I already feel that. Like, I get it. But like, no, the reception's been great, but it was very vulnerable to be like, here you go, you know, and you know, I'm like thinking, are people going to be like, well, it's because you have so many kids. How could you pay attention to the one, you know, like, just like, I don't know. Let's see what people say. And people have been very generous.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it takes a real jerk to attack a parent who's going through that.
We tried to set them up so they'd have to be a real jerk.
All right. Well, I think that's a great place to end today on heart and writing with heart. And anything that you guys want to plug with heart right now, giving it from your soul, anything from your soul you want to plug for us today?
Like a story?
No. Like a book that you've written. Story. Yeah. Your stuff.
If you want to pick up Mustaches for Maddie, that is still available.
It is.
In stores. In print. And they also have some new stuff coming, which is, do you guys tell me?
Yeah. So the next one coming out April of 2025, next year's 2025, right? It's called The Playmakers. And it does have a lot of heart, and it's different heart, than some of the stuff we talked about, right? A boy that
it's a little more of that fire heart.
Yeah. Yeah.
I got to do this.
This super short kid that can't make the basketball team no matter how hard, and he's got a single mom. He can't afford comp teams or anything like that. Gets cut. You know, what are you going to do?
Trying to make his mark with something, right?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And every way he goes, things just get shut down. But he's got a good friend and he's got a couple people that support him. So he decides to get really creative. Another kid who's cut from the play and has a different way of dealing with it. But together they get really creative to try to show they've still got something to offer. And I love it. I think that resonates. I think there's a lot of kids that try really hard and then get cut from things.
Yep, right? I've been
or
there.
Excluded.
Yep, I've been there.
More people have been there than have not been there.
Right.
Yeah. Only one kid gets the lead.
Yeah.
Yeah, Brandon, exactly.
Brandon, what do you got for us?
There's an Adventurer's Guide to Dragon Watch that you can track down that recently came out, which is like a guidebook to the Dragon Watch universe. If that kind of thing is fun for you, that it's got great art and lots of great details.
Oh, it's fun for everybody. Everybody go get it.
And then there's a project I'm working on in the Fablehaven universe that is coming out in the spring. And I'll tell you more about that one next time.
Perfect. That sounds like a great way to end with a teaser. So yeah. Thank you for being here and for mulling it over with us today. And again, just a big shout out to Carter Brown, our editor, for taking care of this podcast for us. And we'll catch you on the next one.
Hey there.
there, fellow adventurers. I am Jason Conforto.
And I'm Tyler Crump, and we are hosts of a podcast, Adventure AI, where we play Dungeons & Dragons with an AI named Alex the Language Lord.
I'm Alex the Language Lord. Join us as we craft epic tales together.
Do you want to learn how to use AI in your D&D campaign?
Or how AI can force you to do things that you don't want to do? Wait a second, we don't like that.
Look no further. Adventure AI is the podcast for all your AI-powered D&D adventures.
Alex the Language Lord not only comes up with campaigns for us,
he also helps us create our characters, create our backstories, and even give us some fun magical items.
And really takes all the human aspects out of Dungeons & Dragons. So it's not really playing at all.
Follow Adventure AI on whatever platform you listen to podcasts.